How's it going, gentlemen? This is Scott McKay, and in this audio, I'm going to present to you how to acquire a very particular, but no doubt golden skill that every bold, confident, dominant, invincible man wants, and indeed should have. That's the ability to walk into any room and own it socially. Note that this is very different than being the center of attention. Owning the room is universally a good thing, while being the center of attention might not be, especially if you're trying to be the center of attention. Now, at the very least, it won't be positive from the standpoint of how that me-first attitude may foment jealousy and resentment on the part of others in the room, especially if you somehow succeed at being the center of attention even by force. And similarly, what I'm about to share is about giving yourself away socially rather than attempting to take from others anyway. For example, blatantly calling attention to yourself, as I just mentioned. When done right, owning a room actually charms people instead of causing them to think of you as somehow douchey or arrogant. Now, this is one of the most important yet overlooked areas of social circle mastery, in large part because it's how you handle social interactions at a larger scale. You see, rooms full of people to socialize with represent a truly powerful, elegant way to connect with many people at once, therefore building your social circle of people you can interact with in smaller groups and even one-on-one. Isn't that cool how that works? Now, on top of that, meeting a relatively large number of people at once is without question far more efficient than calling them all separately, or let alone visiting them all separately. This is why even in the age of social media, like-minded people still love to form mastermind groups and hold trade shows, conferences, etc. So then, how do you actually go about walking into a room and owning it and doing it the right way? Well, for starters, let's talk about timing. Now, if you happen to be the host of a gathering or event, you'll obviously want to get there early and stay late. But notwithstanding that, the strategy is to get there just a bit early, especially if you anticipate there will be time up front to mingle before everyone sits down for a planned or moderated event. If the event itself is all about interaction, then by all means, feel free to get there on time. Perhaps contrary to conventional wisdom, I'd also recommend that you leave slightly early, thereby leaving people wanting more and avoiding the need for the awkward, rapid-fire goodbyes at the end. The exception to this would be if there happens to be a built-in time to interact with a small cadre of truly wonderful people who you know will be there after everyone else leaves. In such a case as that, that's where you might really connect with people on a more relaxed social level, especially if there are fewer people around. But logically speaking, let's get back to the beginning of the event or gathering. After you decide when to arrive, next comes how to actually enter the room. Now, the very first step is to walk up the steps to that venue, stand at the doorway that you know people are behind, hold your head up high and take a deep breath, then confidently open that door and walk right in. Focus on your posture. Is your head held high? Are your shoulders back? Are you ready to project that confidence with how you walk and how you carry yourself? The next is your optimistic vibe. Is there a smile on your face? Do you look confident or do you look horrified like you can't get out of there fast enough? Now, you may have a laugh at what I just described, but when people don't pay attention to this, when they don't proactively take control of what their vibe is, it's amazing how it just falls flat. It descends into natural entropy and they look like they just don't want to be there. Next time you're in a group or a gathering, notice how many people really don't have control over their vibe. The next thing to think about is eye contact. Don't just look down at the floor. Seek eye contact with people, and when you make that eye contact, give them the either eyebrow flash greeting or say hello to them or, you know, give a masculine wave. Make sure you acknowledge people. Now, whatever you do, you don't want to be self-aggrandizing. You don't want to walk in there strutting like some kind of pro wrestler. Keep things natural. Now, from there, once you're actually in the room, move to the center of the gathering where all the people are. That's where, without question, you'll meet and socialize with most of the people. And indeed, that's where most of the socially astute people will be. Shy and introverted people gravitate towards the perimeters of rooms when there's a lot of people in there. And you have absolutely got to resist the magnetic draw to join them, especially if you're in fact shy or introverted yourself. I once had a nice interview with a gentleman who was a professor of psychology in Indiana named Bernie Carducci, and he actually specializes in human introversion and shyness. And he told me something incredibly interesting. When you see people kind of standing around the perimeter of a room, kind of like classic wallflowers, there are actually two different kinds of people standing there. Some of them really just can't wait for the event to be over so they can get out of there. Those people are the introverted types who get more energy from solitude than from being in a big group. Meanwhile, the other people would love to be right there in the center of activity with you, socializing with people, but they're just so socially reticent, aka shy, that they can't do it. Now, obviously, you're not going to own any room by standing at the perimeter of it with your hands in your pockets. So if you happen to be introverted or shy, weigh the social benefits of getting over that in the moment with, you know, the comfort level of simply staying where you are. And maybe you'll have to force yourself a little to be more social, but look at the benefits. And we're going to be talking more about those as we go along. So on that note, how about what should happen when you actually start meeting and interacting with other people? Well, the root of all awkwardness and social tension is indeed fear. If you sense awkward tension between you and someone else before talking to them, resist the urge to shy away and avoid them, and instead, go ahead and boldly break the ice like an invincible man would. If you're not already in the habit of doing this, you'll be amazed at how often people lighten up and feel at ease, even if you'd read their body language as closed and standoffish beforehand. Because you see, deep down, they're probably nervous too, like most people are, not just ourselves. Greet them, and everyone else you meet for that matter, with a smile, a warm smile, not one of those fake social cordial smiles, and genuinely welcome them, even if you're not the host. Make it sincere, and you'll have planted a psychological seed such that they'll be compelled to like you. They'll be charmed by you, putting aside all negativity. Be as bold and confident as you can be, but without being overbearing, just like we talked about back in Audio 1. Remember one of the greatest social tips of all. The person you are talking to is the only person in the room while you're talking to them. Get their name, remember it, and use it in conversation with them a few times. As Dale Carnegie often said, everyone's favorite sound is the sound of their own name spoken. Not many of us really relish the idea of small talk, but you should at least embrace the initial greeting and such. A great way to move away from generic small talk is to replace the standard and perhaps slightly confrontational question, "So, what do you do?" with a less threatening one, such as, "So, how do you know the host?" The beauty of that question is that you'll most certainly have something to talk about because you likely know the host also. Plus, that question is open-ended. That is to say, it requires more than a simple yes or no answer. Open-ended questions are always more conversational. Give it a try. Put that to the test. Similarly, avoid why questions. Note that how come also is simply why in different words. Such questions come off as accusatory. For instance, if you find out a woman is a nurse, if you ask her why she decided to be a nurse, it would somehow come off as a challenge to her sensibilities. What inspired you to be a nurse would be a much friendlier, more socially inviting question, wouldn't it? And then also make sure to make most of the conversation about them. Granted, you don't want to barrage them with interview questions, but definitely build a conversation around whatever they might bring up that clearly interests them. If in time they give you room to interact, and I would assume they would unless they're very poor conversationalists themselves, don't be afraid to show some strong vulnerability by sharing a human interest story or even an innocuous, embarrassing moment. Above all, you don't want to indicate utter lack of respect by hijacking the conversation and changing the subject. Worse, you certainly want to avoid practicing one-upmanship. That is, when they appear proud of something, don't counter with an even more impressive accomplishment of your own. An extreme example would be when someone told you they played football in high school. It would be a social faux pas to say, "Well, that's nothing. I had a full scholarship to Notre Dame and played both ways for 4 years." Now, at times, you may find yourself talking to a small group of more than one person. although it's better socially to avoid horning in on a conversation others are having. If you find yourself naturally in that situation, the best course of action is to listen for a bit and then chime in on the subject they're already on when it's appropriate. You may ask how the folks already visiting know each other. In addition to being a friendly gesture, that also offers you an immediate sense of where you are socially with them. Have they known each other forever? Have they just met? Or is it somewhere in between? Then you can gauge how you fit into the conversation and fit into potentially their social circle once you have that information. Remember, the person or small group of people you're talking to should be the only people in the world to you as you converse with them. As such, resist that temptation to let someone distract you away from a conversation. Dropping the ball with someone makes them feel very insignificant, so it's just poor social skill to do that. In fact, if you find yourself conversing with someone who abruptly turns away from you in favor of someone else who distracted them, especially if it's for more than just a few seconds, feel free to walk away and start a new conversation with someone else. For the record, although it's perfectly acceptable for someone to ask graciously for a second as they deal with someone who has rudely interrupted your conversation, it's equally rude for someone to abruptly deprioritize talking to you in favor of someone else. It's unfair to put you in that awkward position, so there's no need to be left to deal with the awkwardness. If they want to continue the conversation with you later, they'll seek you out. But let's say you're indeed happily conversing with someone, and then someone persists at butting in. At that point, for sure, do what you can to graciously meld them into the conversation you're already having. This is a must, and what you want to do is introduce the person who's butting into the person you're already talking to and connect them by perhaps sharing something impressive about the one person with the other and vice versa. And, you know, maybe drawing some kind of parallel that they have together that they might be able to work with and create a business partnership or even a friendship. That's what connecting is all about. And you know what? This would be an excellent place in this audio to talk about how to be a connector in general. Remember, we talked about being connectable elsewhere in this program relative to relationships with women. This is all about how to be a connector of other people socially. This is a key habit of the most socially effective people. The essence of it is to make sure people who should know each other for whatever reason are introduced so they do know each other. Here's how to do it. Whenever you find that there's someone you know who should probably know someone else in your social circle and you suspect they don't know each other yet, suggest to the one person that you make that introduction. And when they, you know, obviously are going to be pretty excited about that, hopefully, go ahead and either email or call the other person and say, hey, you know what? I think you should meet this person. And here's why. And then give them their number or their email address. Now, I find that email works exceptionally well because, you know, you can CC both parties on the same email. What I typically write is in the subject line, connection, or you two need to know each other. And then I address both of them, like, hey, Dave and John, knowing both of you, I was talking to one of you and the other one of you came up in conversation and I decided that you two definitely need to know each other. John, you make widgets that Dave could probably sell to a million people. So I'll let the two of you take it from here. And then sign with your signature. The reason why this works, and you can already see it's incredibly simple. It's amazing how more people don't do this. But the reason why it works is because both of those connections of yours will now be connected and they will thank you for making that connection, so it gives you more social significance. It doesn't only help those two, it helps you. It makes you the glue that holds your social circle together, and indeed you're the one who's proactively expanding your social circle, and it makes you look like a leader. Now see, most people don't do it, perhaps counterintuitively, because they jealously guard their relationships with people instead of giving them away. But a confident, powerful, invincible man has to have that abundance mentality. And I'm telling you guys, it pays off. People who are connectors are probably the most respected people in their peer group. One example who comes to mind from, you know, over a century ago was the explorer David Livingstone from England, who is best known for opening up a lot of East Africa to exploration. One of the reasons he was able to do so well in such a foreign place with, you know, tribes that were warring against each other and who knows how they're going to treat this guy coming from England and his crew was that he was, wait for it, a connector. He would come from one area and say, hey, you know what? We just visited these people about 50 clicks east of here and they send you their greetings and they would love to meet you. And this other tribe would be disarmed by that and go, well, great. You know, this guy's coming in peace. He's coming to make friends. And the next thing you know, these tribes of people he had barely met are empowering him to go further and further afield within Africa. Now, I'm simplifying this a little bit, but if you ever read his biography, it's just fascinating how well he did this. Now, back in the context of a social situation, if you're connecting someone who attempts to join a conversation you're having with the others you're talking to, and it's either not possible or it's not appropriate to do that in the moment for whatever reason, what you might politely want to do is let them know you'll get to them as soon as you can, or perhaps connect them via email after the party's over. Now, remind people that you have to make the rounds if and when they want to monopolize you, especially if you're the host. Indeed. Commit to that follow-up with them later if you're sure you can keep that commitment without fail. Because every person you see at that party, whether you're the host or not, has to be treated with equal importance. Others, including the most influential people at the gathering, will be watching you do this, and it will make a huge difference. You'll be more respected because of it by everybody, regardless of their level of influence. Also, really avoid controversial topics and or coarse speech like dropping F-bombs, unless and until you know it's friendly territory, and especially until you know the person you're talking to very well and have gauged where their sensibilities are and what their opinions might be. This means staying away from topics that would polarize people unnecessarily also, like politics, especially nowadays, religion, sports team affiliation, and also staying away from topics that you know are opposite to the vibe of the party. For example, as silly as this sounds, praising Ford at a Chevy convention. But people do this. They make these social faux pas all the time, mostly because they're not thinking and they're not paying attention. Also, keep conversation light, not dark. Avoid being pesado. Now, pesado is a Spanish word that doesn't have a direct English translation, but if you're it, you're toast. I describe it as kind of like being gloomy in a high-maintenance way, all packaged in a manner that seeks to bring others down to their own level. It's kind of like being Eeyore in the Winnie the Pooh books, right? If time is short with each individual, it's all the more important to talk about them almost exclusively, because factoids about them that you can remember will go a long way towards making them like you, even if you have little time for them. Also, find out what they're interested in and make conversation as such. The more you remember about someone, the more amazing you'll be to them the next time you encounter them socially. That's very important to remember. Now, when it's time to leave, find the host and thank them. If you promise to follow up with anyone before leaving, definitely do so. And by all means, if you want to reconnect with people later, boldly get their business cards and or enter their contact information without hesitation. Suggest rather than ask, just like when asking women out. That all goes without saying, yet so many people in their haste to leave either forget or chicken out when it comes time to really connect with someone and make sure that connection sticks in the future. So by now you're probably asking, hey, why not just be proactive and throw the party or get together myself? Why not be the host? Well, that's a great idea, but remember, that will have to be on a bit of a grand scale, or else you'll already know all of the people who attend. It's always valuable to hang out with your friends and acquaintances, of course, but social events thrown by others are where you can truly make tons of new connections quickly, and that's a central point to this audio. After all, if you're the host, you own the room by definition. So hey, you could make the argument that you should host as many of the events you go to as possible. This might not actually be so far-fetched. I know a guy who masterfully succeeded for years now in proactively hosting most every get-together for his entire social circle at either his home or office. Granted, this is greatly facilitated by the simple facts that A, he has a nice roomy home and office, and more importantly, B, everyone else he knows is either too lazy or too shy to plan their own event at their place. Now, over time, it's just become an accepted fact that everyone meets at his place. And yes, he controls the frame, and he's therefore the center of his social circle. So, yes, indeed, if you have the vision to do so, you can hold an event and definitely control the frame. Full-on event planning strategy is obviously beyond the scope of this program. But suffice it to say that when you're the host, you do want to arrive early and stay late, and it'll be practically a moral imperative to socialize with virtually everyone who shows up, notwithstanding such a huge attendance number that you can't possibly make that happen. For larger events like that, by the way, it's always a plus to either co-host events with someone else or designate people to help you out. Importantly, it's always crucial to monitor your stress level anytime you're in a social situation, but especially if you're the host. If there was ever a time to not sweat the small things, it's when you're hosting a get-together. I'm reminded of an unfortunate memory. I once looked on as a guy was unable to enjoy his own wedding reception in the very least because he was too stressed out over the caterer, the band, and the venue. If I remember correctly, someone hadn't been paid yet and he didn't have his checkbook and they didn't take a credit card and it was a mess. Now, with that said, it's time to get to the final point. And I'm sure you're wondering how to handle conversations with women in particular when you're in a group setting. Well, guess what, guys? You can definitely feel free to be as bold, confident, and masculine as you habitually would anywhere else and at any time. Your masculinity will do the heavy lifting if any attraction is going to be created, if you care for it to be created. Meanwhile, be warm and focus on making her feel safe and comfortable. Give her 18 inches of space and make that 24 inches if you're over 6 feet tall. Again, all of this is business as usual for the man who believes women can't hurt him and don't even want to. All of the other principles we've covered in this audio program apply from there. If you indeed find you'd like to spend some time with her at a future time, first gauge her relationship status, perhaps by implying she has a husband somewhere during the course of natural conversation and getting her reaction. For example, she may say something, you know, a little testy or a little naughty, and you could say, "Man, what does your husband think of that?" And then she might respond with, "Oh, I don't have a husband." Boom. Bingo. That's what you're looking for. Then it's important to accurately judge the vibe of the event itself to make sure you can reasonably pull off getting her number and inviting her out without it having negative social ramifications for you, her, or anyone else in attendance for that matter, save perhaps any other guy who wishes they had asked her out first, right? Now, for what it's worth, you would be shocked at the broad range of events you can ask women out at. Numbers have been exchanged for potentially romantic purposes at funerals before. A little boldness goes a long way. Now, given an all clear to make it happen, keep it discreet, but tell her in no uncertain terms that you like her and would like to see her again. I love the boldness of, say, Don Draper in Mad Men when he confidently and casually yet boldly suggests to a woman, "Let's have dinner." So, there you have it, gentlemen. Keep in mind the largely straightforward steps and tips we've covered in this audio, and you'll go far socially. It may all sound like simple common sense, but how many people do you know who have really mastered the art of walking into a room and owning it? From now on, you have that unbeatable advantage. Oh, and don't ever shake left-handed with someone who has it in for you. This is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Until I talk to you on the next audio, be good out there.